I'm Kieran Chetry.
And I'm Jeremy Goldman. And this is Future Proof. So, starting out a little bit with a little bit of silence instead of our usual music, right, Kieran?
Yeah, this is a heavy topic for us to discuss today on Future Proof, because we are talking with Ali Sheehy. She is a senior who survived the shooting in Broward County, Florida. Saw some of her classmates, her coaches, and other people that she loved die in the wake of this school shooting. She is somebody who has become overnight, as well as many of her classmates, advocates and hopefully future leaders to help us figure out what we do about gun violence in America.
Here's our conversation. Ali, thank you so much for making the time. And how are you doing in general? Because, I mean, I can't even imagine. So nobody can pretend to imagine how somebody must feel in the aftermath of something like this.
Yeah. It's been crazy. That's the best way I can describe it. It's been just crazy.
I think what was really interesting to me, and I think the first way that I kind of discovered you was the poem and hearing about that. And I mean, obviously the tweet, because I live on Twitter, but I mean, can you tell us a little bit about your poem and how you, like, kind of what inspired you to write that in order to, I guess, just have a voice in the process and let people know, you know, how you felt about what went down?
Well, on Twitter that morning, I woke up and I saw what the president had tweeted about the FBI's failure. And I kind of took it as, why did he have to make it about himself in something that is so serious, where people lost their lives? And so I responded, and I thought of it as a way, because the president uses Twitter as his platform.
Yes.
And everybody kind of knows that he talks a lot about stuff that he wouldn't normally talk about in meetings and stuff on Twitter. And Twitter is kind of like, social media in general is our platform. Like, that's kind of where we reside usually. And I found it the best way to reach him directly. I thought, why not?
So why don't you, will you tell us a little bit about what you said in the poem?
Yeah, I'll pull it up real quick.
Sure.
I wrote this poem about 3 days after it happened. And it was kind of just me seeing everything on Twitter, on social media, on the news, and getting angry about what people were talking about and what they weren't talking about.
Go ahead and read it for us.
Okay. My poem is called Dear Mr. President. My friends have died. They are gone from our lives. Yet you sit there twiddling your thumbs. My friends have died, the life gone from their eyes, yet you sit there talking anything but guns. My friends have died, and we've cried and cried, yet you sit there blaming the mentally ill. My friends have died, our voices pushed aside, yet you sit there still. My friends have died, and our tears aren't dried, yet you sit there watching us plead. My friends have died, an issue nationwide. You sit there still, so how about you lead? As a community forever unified, I ask you, sir, how did this happen to us? I invite you to learn to hear the story from inside, because if not now, when will the right time be to discuss?
Whew. Sorry, thank you again, because I know that that's got to be like very intense to read. And also, I gotta applaud you for being a lot more respectful than I would be in your situation, which I know is not easy to do. So.
Well, actually, the funny part is that I've gotten a lot of messages on my Twitter for being disrespectful to the president for writing this.
Oh God.
And, I mean, people are going to respond the way I knew that when I posted it. It's just, I didn't blame the president. I don't want to blame the president for what happened. I was just asking him, why is nothing being done?
Right. I don't think it was disrespectful at all. You know, for people who are constitutionalists who believe in our freedom of speech as much as they believe in our right to bear arms, should understand that you can say whatever you want to say. And that's why our country is supposedly free. But I did find it interesting that you brought up, because I'm pretty nonpartisan. I say that there's idiots on all sides. The thing that really did stick with me when I heard the first comments, not guns, but mentally ill, he said, that was the first sort of place to cast blame, was on the mentally ill, not on our gun laws or our ability to, for a young man, very young man, to acquire an assault rifle that could kill 17 people. So that really struck me too.
Well, yeah, actually, Allie, I want to ask you about, since the name of the podcast is Future Proof, we always think about where things are going and kind of what are the solutions to the problems or, you know, any challenges in our society. So one thing that really struck me is that you had, it's an issue nationwide, which of course it is. Mm-hmm. And from what you know, I don't know how much you've like studied the issue, of course, before everything happened the other week, but why do you think it's so much of an issue here versus other countries, just from your lens of having experienced what you've experienced?
Well, my entire life during school, we've grown up with these code red situations, these code red drills. And the issue part that I see is that other countries have taken action towards trying to stop it from happening. And our country has kind of been like, oh, we'll send our thoughts and prayers. We'll say that it's not the time to talk about it, and we'll move on. And people will forget about it, and we'll move on to the next tragedy. And something that I'm seeing a lot differently here is that we're not going to accept that. We're not going to let there be another tragedy happen, because we now know how it feels to be in this situation, and I don't want anybody else to ever be in this situation.
No, I think that you're absolutely right. You guys are very, very, it must be a good high school, let me put it that way, because when I listen to the thoughts and comments from many of your classmates, you guys have a maturity about you. Maybe you had to grow up a little bit too fast because of this happening. But I also heard from one of your fellow classmates who said the same thing about a call to action. And one thing that really struck me is that you guys are going to be that future generation of lawmakers, of leaders, and you will be able to make changes. If you had that power today, what would you change? What would be the first items of business, so to speak, when it comes to preventing gun violence?
I know one thing that a lot of us feel very strongly about is getting the assault weapons, such as the AR-15, off the market, off the streets, and banning that kind of weapon. We have been doing a lot of research on it. We have, especially for the CNN town hall that we participated in. Unfortunately, we did not get to ask our question, but we went into a lot of research about how these military grade weapons have no place in the hands of anybody, really. I don't see why a weapon specifically designed for killing people has any place on the streets. And also, one thing that we really want to make clear is that we're not trying to take away the Second Amendment. if you want a gun for your protection, we're not going to take that away from you. We're trying to make it harder for people that have criminal backgrounds, that have mental health issues, or that even like just criminal intent. It's just, we don't want it to be that easy to get something that can hurt so many people.
Yeah. I mean, I think the example that, that people, and it's very interesting because one way that I heard somebody refer to it is kind of like, well, the founders of the country didn't make reference to everybody getting a car and being able to jump in a car without a driver's license because they didn't have cars. So as a result, we got to make up our own decision about what would be the safest thing with respect to cars. And we said people should be licensed. They should be a certain age. They should pass tests and everything, you know, which is, if you've seen Kieran drive, it's a good thing that we have licenses, by the way. So
I drive very rarely. I try to keep the people around my community safe and try to help roads. But you know, Jeremy, you bring up a point. And the thing that people that drives me crazy is people who don't even understand what the Second Amendment actually says or said using it. It actually says, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And when they talk about a well-regulated militia, what they were talking about is this is fresh off of us winning our freedom, you know, from another country. And the fear that the government could at any time come back in huge droves and basically, you know, take away people's individual rights. Well-regulated is a very important aspect. They even said it back then. I highly doubt the founding fathers meant that a mentally unstable young man could have a military grade weapon, in the home he was staying at, as I understand it. I don't think that that's what well-regulated meant.
Well, and I think that especially since we haven't lived through this, I agree. I mean, I think that even asking Allie on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, how concerned are you about Great Britain, like, coming back and invading us again? I'm guessing it's not really something that you're thinking super likely.
I mean, my dad was born in England, and I have family in England, so... My threat level from them is about a zero for them.
So exactly,
back.
Yeah. Thank so, amen.
But you know, there are a lot of people who can't wrap their minds around this. We see, at least I do, every single day at Grand Central Station. You know, New York, of course, experienced the worst terror attack. You know, on our country's soil since Pearl Harbor. Sorry. We experienced the worst attack on U.S. soil on 9/11/2001. And we're taking precautions to at least try to make sure that that can't happen again in New York. And if you walk around Grand Central Station, there are National Guardsmen armed in uniform standing there with huge guns to make sure that nobody dares try anything. Now, it's a deterrent. There's no doubt about it. What I don't understand is we have them at airports. We have them at courthouses. We even have them on the Hollywood red carpet. Okay. You know, snipers on the rooftops of buildings when there's a red carpet event, or let's say, New Year's Eve Times Square. Yet our children go to school in places that are largely unprotected. I'm not saying that Donald Trump's idea that, you know, teachers should be packing heat is necessarily the best idea. But what I don't understand is why our schools and classrooms and the children and teachers within them are basically sitting ducks. Our mayor here, de Blasio in New York, said, well, when asked, well, why aren't there, you know, some armed guards around schools, just like there would be in places like courthouses and airports and, you know, train stations. And he said, well, it would cost $1.2 billion for us to pay to have armed security around schools. So it's not as though it's not an issue that has been discussed. It's basically, he seemed to be saying, we simply can't afford it. And we're talking about the lives of our kids. Do you think that if there were armed guards around your school or one, that this murderer would have thought twice?
Honestly, no. 'Cause if he had his heart set on coming to the school and hurting people, I think that he still would have been able to, especially with the weapon that he had. I don't see how taking money that could be used towards more books, more better education for other people that could be used for that should be used to place deterrence around a school and make it a prison. I know I wouldn't feel safer with someone standing on our school grounds with a gun. We had an officer that was armed, that was on campus, but he only had a handgun.
Right. And there's a bit of a controversy about whether or not he should have taken more action. Apparently he's no longer working.
No, he resigned.
A question that I have about the school also is this. What about, you're right, against an AK-47 or an AR-15 rifle, a handgun isn't necessarily going to make that huge of a difference. But to see some of the video and to see the children and the teachers basically as sitting ducks, meaning they couldn't even apparently contact the outside world. There were kids who were texting using their iMessage because you guys have Wi-Fi, but people said that there was no cell service. Can you clarify that?
When it happened, I honestly don't know exactly why the cell service went out. I think it was just the influx of everybody trying to contact someone all at one time. And it kind of just turned into a dead zone there. But it was crazy.
And on any given day, you guys can make calls. You have cell service around the school.
Yes. Okay. Any given day, we have the ability to make calls and text messages. And there's like a few places in the school, since it's so like it's such a big campus, that there's a few places that the cell service doesn't work as great, but it's still there. But yeah, we can make calls and text message regularly.
So one thing I want to also ask you is, because obviously that's one thing that could be changed tomorrow, which is that there's almost kind of redundancy so that there's a landline or more landlines. Because when tragedies happen, sadly, cell phone service does get jammed. And it's like when you need it the most, that's when it's not there sometimes. But what do you think, now that you've lived through this, could change or should change tomorrow as it relates to making students safer? Because short-term actions, I mean, I feel like there's the short term and the long term. So it's almost like a two-part question. But what do you think needs to happen tomorrow? And then what do you almost hope could happen 20 years down the line? What do you hope the U.S. can look like with respect to this issue?
I mean, I get the argument of trying to make school safer, but this is something that we've been doing since it started in Columbine. We've started implementing drills. We've made doors heavier and thicker, and we've put locks on every door, made teachers lock them all. And we have zones for fire drills, and we have codes now and PA systems so everybody can know what's going on at one time. And it's just, I feel like they keep on trying to make the same changes, but not realizing that it's going to end up with the same result. So I want to see something else done other than just trying to make the school safer, because we've been trying to do that for a very long time, and it's not working.
Right. Do you know anything about this particular kid? A few people have talked about the fact that they were afraid of him, or concerned for him, that it was known that he was posting things like pictures of him with handguns. And apparently some of the postings that he put on his social media said something like school shooting. I'm going to do that tomorrow, or something along those lines. How much did you know about him, and did any warnings that you've heard of fall on deaf ears, not with the FBI, but with people within your school community?
I don't think the warnings fell on deaf ears. I think the warnings were so overwhelming that they didn't have the resources to do anything for him, which is also another problem that we really need to address. But as for knowing him, he was in my grade. I know that. I saw him around.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. He had been expelled. He was not currently going to your school.
Yeah, he was expelled last year. Okay.
Are there like, I know this sounds crazy, but you know, like you would put up a mugshot almost. In some of the places that I've worked, there have been pictures of former employees. I mean, this is literally at CNN and Fox, where people were to be looking out for this certain person. Were there any of those types of warnings? I mean, after somebody's expelled for violent behavior, as I understood it, for fights, would he be somebody that administrators would be on the lookout for?
I think administrators were aware that he was not allowed back on campus, but I did not
and
see
to your, any and to, I guess, Allie, to your point before, it's like, what at that point, what does it even matter by the time you see somebody who has a weapon that, you know, then what good does it do if they're like 20 feet away?
I know a lot of controversy over it is, how did he actually get on campus, or how did he get into that building? The way that the school is laid out, there's only a few gates that you can actually like walk into, and the way I understood it is that we have security that goes around on golf carts, and 20 minutes before the bell rings, they go in and lock the gates so that kids can leave when the bell rings. He arrived in an Uber car and got out next to the bike racks, and the way that the building, the freshman building, is located, it's in what we call our senior parking lot, and it's right next to a gate. So he just wore his Douglas shirts that he used to wear when he attended our school and walked right through the gates. And the building, by that time, if someone even noticed him, he would be in the building before they could do anything, because it's that close to one of the gates. So that's how he got in. And then he pulled the fire alarm to get people out of class.
And there were a few people that said, I mean, you know, in all of these situations in life, there are these unsung heroes. And I was hearing from a few students that as soon as a couple of administrators, I think it was a janitor even, got wind of what was happening, and the fire alarm was pulled, there were people who said, I'm alive today because this janitor said, get back in your class, get back. Do not go out in the hallway. Yeah. Because they had realized, oddly, that you guys had already had a fire drill that morning. And it just rung very suspicious to this person. And in all of these situations, I guess sometimes it takes tragedy for us to become more aware. But, you know, for those of us, for example, that live in New York City, there's no way somebody could set a backpack down in a subway car and not have, you know, 20 people just, you know, say something. Yeah. And it's sad that that's a sign of our times. But it seems as though some of the actions of very heroic teachers, students, and others who worked at your school saved even more lives. I mean, 17, that's hideous, hideous to even think about 17 beautiful lives lost. But when you're talking about being versing a, you know, assault rifle, an automatic, you know, or semi-automatic, it could have been times 10 if it hadn't been for some smart thinking people.
Mm-hmm. I'm at a loss for words for the teachers that helped save so many people, save my friends in that room.
Sorry. What do you? Yeah, sorry, about? Kieran. You go first.
No, it would be really interesting for us to hear another, you know, situational anecdote about that. When you said saved your friends, explain.
So I was not actually in the building when it happened. My teacher had to leave early that day. So she dropped us off in the auditorium to be left with, another teacher called Coach O. And he had his own class that was actually in the freshman building, and he took his class and walked over to the auditorium to watch us. So by some grace, he wasn't actually in the building when it happened. Then when the fire alarm was pulled, we knew that it was weird. We definitely thought it was weird, but it wasn't because we thought that something like that was happening. We thought it was just like culinary burnt something again, because they did that the last time, or they were like retarring the roof one time and it caught on fire. So we thought it was something like that. And we thought it was definitely weird that it was so close to the bell. So we started filing out. But then we heard like a pop, and then kids just started screaming and running, and we didn't know what was going on. And then people were waving us back to go back inside, saying, "We have to get back inside. We have to get back inside right now." And I was like, okay, this is weird. This isn't normal. Something's definitely wrong. So we all got inside, and we were sitting on the floor behind the chairs in the auditorium. And I was just trying to text as many people as I knew that were at school today. And at first we thought it was a drill, because that morning there was a 10-minute announcement from our assistant principal for teachers to make sure that they knew protocol, their zones, and the codes. So I was like, oh, this has to be the drill that they've been talking about for a month, about how they're going to have someone come on campus and shoot blanks. It was not the drill.
They were.
You
were going to do that? They were going to have somebody come on campus and shoot blanks?
They were going to have a deputy from the Broward County Sheriff's Office come and shoot blanks so that the teachers knew what to do and we could practice it, because this was something this year that was they wanted to focus on a lot. And it's just insane to think that
do you think he knew that? Do you think that he knew that there was this, or just some wild coincidence that on the same day he decided?
No, I definitely think that I think it's a wild coincidence that the announcement happened on the same day, but I definitely think that he knew that there was rumors going around of someone coming on campus and shooting blanks. I definitely 100% believe that that's why he thought that this was a good time to do it.
That is unbelievable.
I wanted to, I guess, and Ali, I know you have to go in a little bit. Yeah, so that's really tough to hear. I mean, my little personal perspective, and I care more about yours, but just I'm pretty anti-gun in general. That's fine. Everybody can have different opinions on that. But I think that part of what people forget about is when they hear a number like 17 people lost or kids lost, they are, you know, mixed, whatever. They don't really think about the individual people. And I don't know if it's possible or if it's too tough, but just to even sometimes people think about it more like a number and less like an individual. So is there anything that you can tell us about, you know, anybody who, you know, you knew close or not close, that just to kind of bring it home and make people realize that these are actual people who aren't going to have a chance to create the next Facebook or the next SpaceX or, you know, anything. And I know that's a very tough question.
Yeah. I did know a few. For Coach Hickson, one of the people that died, I played softball for our school and he would be at every game. I'd see him every single time sitting on his little golf cart, and just kind of knowing that he was there was good. He'd give us rides to the fields because the softball fields are all the way on the other side of the school. So we didn't want to walk all the time and we'd pester him to give us rides over there. And now that I think of it, I kind of feel bad about making him do that. Then there was, Carmen Sunchup. She's been in most of my classes since freshman year, and she was just so smart. I never understood it. I'd get so jealous of her in physics because she just understood it immediately. And then I would be sitting at my desk staring at numbers and not understand how we got there. And she would be very helpful in explaining, and she took the time to explain it to me. And I was very grateful for that. Then there was also Aaron Feiss. He would open the gates for the senior lot that we all park in, and just waving to him every morning. I'm going to miss not being able to do that.
You know, so. It's unbelievable how you guys are going to go back. When is school? It's back already? You guys are already going back to that building?
We are going back next week. And we're not going back in that building.
Gosh, thank God for that. I know it sounds weird, and there is some emotion about that. I remember when I covered the Virginia Tech shooting as well, that, you know, there were a lot of kids that, and these were college kids that were, you know, saying we're not going to be afraid to go back because that means that, you know, the bully, the terror, the person who put out this terror and who did this is going to win in a way. But as a parent, mm-hmm. you know, I have two children and three stepchildren. It is terrifying. I mean, what have your parents said? How are they feeling? And is there a call to action among parents in your community about finding out answers and also solutions?
Well, with my mom and dad, they've kind of left it up to what I want to do in respect to going back. And I started there. I want to graduate from there. I don't want this to be something that keeps me from doing that. And the support that we have from just the community in general is insane. Because I know my sister, she went to the middle school that's right next to our high school. And we've been organizing school walkouts and marches. And for the school walkout days, her teachers have even been like, if I just turn around for 10 seconds and all of you are gone, I can't stop you. I'm not going to stop you from using your voice. And it's just, no words can describe how amazing it is to see how much support we have for what we're trying to do, for what we're trying to change. And I think that's really important that people know that we're not alone in this, that there's so many people that want to see change done.
You are absolutely not alone. Although, you know, I'm sure that is not enough for
doesn't take anything away exactly from what everybody has gone through.
You mentioned that you were not able to ask your question at the CNN town hall. What was the question that you wanted to ask?
Yes, our question that we wanted to ask was something a lot of people in my little friend group was asked to ask a question. So we all formulated a Google Doc together so that we wouldn't ask the same question. And this was one of them that we really felt that nobody kind of talked about. So I'll share this one. Many individuals fear their guns will be confiscated with the passage of firearm legislation bearing certain guns, barring certain guns from being produced, distributed, and acquired. Thus, these individuals turn to the Second Amendment to argue the federal government cannot impose legislation banning the acquisition of certain guns. What are the boundaries established by the Second Amendment, and how is Congress empowered or restricted by these boundaries to impose firearm legislation? We felt like this was very important because of the argument that people have over what the Second Amendment actually covers. So we really wanted to hear from them what their idea that it covers.
Well, it is a great question, and I'm glad that you got to ask it here, and people will hear it. And hopefully lawmakers will stop worrying about being reelected and worry more about protecting the precious lives that were lost at your school. And
it's going to, honestly, things like this take time, but as you guys are turning into voters, I mean, people respond to incentives. This is a tipping point in that more and more, as I think Kieran and I were maybe talking about this analogy, but as more and more people knew somebody who was coming out of the closet, it was harder and harder to be super anti-gay rights because you knew somebody who you would be like saying, sorry, you can't get married, or sorry, you can't whatever. And I think that sadly, we're at a tipping point where more and more people have either seen gun violence firsthand or know somebody who's been affected. And that's part of, I think, why we wanted to bring your story out is that and mm-hmm. bring the people who are lost in some ways, give them a real name and have people get to know them a little bit, is that the tipping point happens a little bit faster when everybody feels motivated to do something. And when there's more negative backlash for lawmakers, when you incentivize lawmakers to do something, they will do something. Up until now, they just haven't really been incentivized. So it's in some way, it's hard to blame. But
well, with that, if it doesn't happen, if the lawmakers now don't make that happen, I can assure you that all the people in schools right now will be of voting age at that point, and we will vote them out. Because I'm registered to vote, so come November, I'm using that power.
You. As you know, what that's. For everybody that talks about, you know, the Second Amendment, there's many others, and your constitutional rights are to speak out and do not let yourself feel the least bit bad. Your poem was beautiful, and we will make sure that your story gets out there and your school's story gets out there.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Wow. So, okay. First off, like I told her afterwards, so much more poised than I was at that age. And she's so great. I mean, I can we adopt her?
I know. I mean, she, you know, I have goosebumps, you know, just gosh, you know, 18 years old to have the poise and the grace under the type of pressure and tragedy is just unbelievable. So this Ally Sheehy, a senior there, and has gone to that school, she said, since she was a freshman, and said she's not going to let this tragedy stop her from graduating from that school.
I think it's definitely one of those things where I know we talk a lot about the future of things that are a little bit more high tech, and this is a little bit more legislation driven, right? We're not really talking about the technology behind these AR-15 style guns and everything, but I do think it's going to be an important shift in the U.S. over the next X number of years. I mean, there are a lot of tea leaves you can read that just indicate that the direction is not necessarily to have us be anti-gun, but just to have us be sensible a little bit more than we have been. Thank you guys very much for staying with this, because I think maybe this episode might run a little bit long. And just if you haven't subscribed to us previously, make sure to do so on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever finer podcasts are sold. And you can also rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, which truly, truly helps other people find us. So thanks again. And
the NRA will find us. I know that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman.
And I'm Kieran Chetry. And this is Future Proof.